This Sunday. Sunday. Side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino calls them as they sees them, and you better believe them. Here! Relevant news, biased opinions, and outright bullshit regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! Yeah. Mechanical trickery never before revealed over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Chris and Ray cuss each other down the track and barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil! All that and much more this Sunday at high noon on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and live feed, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Long Island Expressway to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the sign saying no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Sunday!
Well, it may have been too much for you, and you may not like to take a train, and you may not be in Georgia, but I'll tell you what. I heard this song this week, and the Hammond B3 organ just speaks to me. So we played Midnight Train to Georgia to welcome in Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show here on this fine island, with hosts Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer, and special guest, Mr. Steve Linden. Steve, how are you? Oh, we need Steve. Steve needs a mic. That's right.
Yes. Steve needs a mic. That's right, Steve Linden, our vintage car appraisal, pre-purchase inspector, dispute and conflict resolution maker, expert witness and consulting, an overall good guy, helps old ladies across the street, collects rocks, helps the poor. He's awesome. He's Steve Linden, and we love him.
He forgot one word.
Yeah, he always does.
Extraordinaire. Around. Remember, you used to always say extraordinaire.
Expert extraordinaire. An all-around good guy.
Exactly. So, Steve, it's been a while since... Last time we had you on was on a Zoom call during the pandemic. You were one of our first guests.
Oh, wow.
During that period. And... here we are live again, so it's great. We're back doing it the old way. And we're still in a little bit of a hybrid view, but it's pretty much the way it was. And if you want to get in on this fun and talk to Steve, you can call us at 516-572-7440. I don't have a flashing light anymore, so I have to watch the phone. I'll have to...
Ooh, okay.
So, Steve, if I'm not looking at you, I'm just... trying to see if we have a phone call.
So that's what you meant by the old-fashioned way.
Well, part of it, yeah.
Okay.
And the steam generator we have over here, and that thing you're pedaling to crank, that's also part of it, but it keeps us on the air.
You know what? I just say, just hook up the bell back on the phone, and just when you hear the phone ring, just pick it up.
Right.
That's what we've come down to that point and that line in the sand, that's for sure. Steve, I've got thousands of questions to ask you, because you know you are like... The most important person that I could speak to automotively, because you and I talk the same language. I love cars as investments. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in Jay Leno when he says, if you make money in this business, you're doing it wrong. I think you can.
Is that still true today? That's the question.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that is a good question. And I talk to people about this almost every day. And sure. I have to say that the last 2 years, we've all lived through something that almost anybody alive has never lived through before. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to keep that in the back of your mind. And if you're going to try to predict the future based on the past, it's a little hard.
Because, more than ever. Sure.
But that's how trends and that's how things in a hobby are determined, correct? They go by past trends and they look at standards and whatnot and then try and forecast the future what will what will happen, which is always suspect to a pandemic. You know, something like that happens or some weirdo glitch in the system, and now everything is just out the window.
I think you're right. You know? Yeah. So it's very, very hard to predict. But I think it's still possible to make money.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, if you've looked at the auctions, I was watching some of the Orlando auction yesterday, and the recent ones, the prices have been ridiculously insane.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, cars going for way over what they had in the past. And, you know, you can speak to that better than any of us as to why. So,
well, you know, it's a good question why. As to the last couple of years through the pandemic, you know, my experience is that people have, especially at the beginning of the pandemic, they saw buying, and I'm purposely avoiding the word investing because these are people who are not investors.
Right.
They were buying classic cars because it was kind of a responsible way to get out of the house during the pandemic, you know.
Sure.
So they were taking their savings and putting it into a car instead. You know, so I think that's what took place during the last couple of years. And, you know, with prices going up, investors obviously are beginning to – not beginning. They've been looking for years now. But, yeah, prices are up. And whether they will continue to go up is anybody's guess.
Yeah, that's the thing, because obviously, like with any investing, you want to buy low, sell high.
Right.
But as we know, there's guys at these auctions who have collections.
Yes.
And they will sell off maybe 10, 12, 20 cars and then restock, you know, with the other flavor of the day. So they're just moving money. You know, I don't even think some of these guys don't even, you know, maybe it was the Impala collection, but it was only because, well, this way it was easy to list it as the Impala collection. I don't think that some of them even look at the cars. I may be wrong. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's interesting, again, what you said, you know, buy low, sell high. That's been, you know, for time in memoriam, that's always been, you know, the business model for somebody who wants to make money on cars. But, you know, I speak to dealers every day of the week, and for the past 2 years, they have not been buying low and selling high. They've been buying high and selling high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Buying high and selling higher.
They've been saying to me, listen, you know, I have to pay now for cars what I was selling them for 2 years ago. But they're selling them for more, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, and then as you mentioned, of course, there's the people with the collections and there's the investors, and they're looking for long-term rather than short-term like a dealer. So, you know, it's a little bit of a learning curve for everyone.
Yeah, and of course, as your article, which is so, I like to quote so many times, I have this week's here because there's some good stuff in here about don't be a guinea pig.
Oh, yeah.
Local shops, we've all known guys, some of our friends have been affected personally by maladies of having a car restored at a local shop and not getting the resolution that they wanted and going to another shop and then dragging it out. And this can go on for 7, 8, 10 years sometimes and then, you know, still with no resolution. So there's that. Not everything is a TV show is what people need to learn. Not everything happens
That's for sure.
in an hour. Certainly not.
So. You know, that is a great line. I have to remember that. Not everything is a TV show. That's so true.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, listen, just like I can play off and claim to being you by wearing a Steve Linden embroidered shirt that's even a little raggy, steal my line. Why not? Use it. It's fine.
That's a great line. I love
We're all
that
friends.
Line. You know, my partner in one of our companies, he has a line, you know, people say, why should I start planning around my car collection now? And his line that he came up with is, nobody knows your cars like you do.
Right.
You know, and unfortunately, whatever the precipitating factor is that may make somebody have to deal with your collection, nobody knows your cars like you.
That's very true.
And that's why I love that line. That's a great line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, feel free to use it.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of steers me away from resto mods, because resto mods, you don't know where they were built. You have no clue. They could have been built in some local shop. They could have been built in some bigger shop. You don't know. So if you see a resto mod, it was concocted in someone's mind, and if they didn't leave a trail of information as to what they did and how they did it, I would be like a little skittish if I was going to plunk down $100,000 for a resto mod Cuda or Challenger and go, if something goes wrong, it's not stock. It wasn't built in the factory. It wasn't restored as stock. Mm. Where's the paper trail? That would kind of give me pause to plunk down that kind of cash, and people don't. They just drop the money down and get in the car and drive away. And I find that more guts than brains sometimes.
You know, being in the end of the hobby from a guy who works on the cars myself and builds them, my concern is, and knowing in my own car what I've done, you don't get, like you said, Chris, you don't get that laundry list of parts and suppliers that are put in that car. So, okay, well, the brake caliper says Wilwood or Bear. Okay, that's an obvious one.
Sure.
So, you know, you can get brake pads or a part. But, you know, what suspension components are those? Like, there's no name on them. You know, they're tubular controls, but whose are they? You know, what size ball joint is that? What if I need bushings? Where are you going to get them? and down, and that just goes to every facet of the car. You know, you got these great billet door handles. Well, now one of them, say the spring goes bad in a few years, and now you're the new owner. How do you get that fixed? Who are you going to go to? You
know, yeah,
a lot of, and yeah, that question just goes on infinitum. It's crazy.
It does, so, yeah. I happen to be personally, and I can't believe I'm saying this, I've become a fan of Restomods, because up until 5 years ago or so, I was a purist.
Mm-hmm.
But right. Restomods, you know, I find myself looking at a lot of Restomods because, you know, from an inspection perspective, people are buying them. And I find the younger generation getting into them, and even a lot of the older generation, because if they're done right, you can get in and turn the key and it drives like a modern car.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I always tell people when you're looking at a Restomod, which is, addresses what both of you just said, you look at two things. You look at the quality of the components and you look at the quality of the workmanship.
Right, sure.
The quality of the components, the major components, are generally easy to identify. There's almost a recipe book for them. You know, if it's got an old carbureted engine, it's one category of Restomod. If it's got a fuel-injected engine, you know, out of the crate, it's another one.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Wilwood or Bear brakes. It's got vintage air conditioning. Mm-hmm. You know, if they used good components, then you really just have to look at the workmanship.
Right.
And if all of that is good, you're going to buy a car for 50 cents on the dollar that it cost somebody to build.
Many times, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm watching the auctions. You know, the big dollar cars are obviously the big dollar cars.
Yes.
And then there's always that surprise car that's the numbers run up like crazy.
Yep.
But then you'll see like an older street rod that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, you're looking at it, you know, on your TV, and the car will go for like $35,000 or $40,000. Like,
right.
Wait a minute, that car cost $100,000 to build, you know, 10 years ago.
That's right. Which leads me to a Steve Linden line, where you pay for the restoration and get the car for free.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's another good line. Yeah.
Yep. And it's true. Yeah. And, you know, don't forget on the auctions, this statement in a vacuum is not 100% accurate, but you see what they want you to see. You know, if you watch it on a Wednesday afternoon instead of a Saturday night,
right,
you're going to see those same cars that people put $200,000 into sell for $80,000, $90,000,
$100,000.
Yeah. So it's, they can be good buys, these cars, if you're careful.
Yeah, I think so. And it all depends who's in the room. That's
right.
The auction game, you know,
exactly.
Depends who's there.
Yep.
But, Chris, I wanted to tell you something, because I just got a message just this morning from a good friend of mine, friend of the show, and he said he was out lazing his pool yesterday, and his dog was in the pool with him, and all of a sudden he heard a noise come from his, you know, from the driveway, and he went out and looked. This is the fellow who's driving my sister's old Mercury that he had bought years ago. It's a 69 Montego.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's kind of a pretty cool car in retrospect. Well, I'll read to you what he said. He says, okay, at some point during his living a dream moment, I hear a kaboom. Well, as the subject line implies, which was 35-year-old tires, one of the tires that was on this car decided to just blow up sitting in the driveway. He goes, and I'm thinking, like, I'm glad I wasn't driving the car, and he just wanted to share it with a group of us. And I said, yeah, I know a guy who's got old tires on a car, too, that he... So beware. I've never had one blow out on me like that, but I have had tires that sat in my driveway on a car, and the tread just, like, peeled off of them.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, I've had that, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so be careful.
Steve, what Ray is alluding to is the 300 that I have sitting in the garage has got Sears tires on it.
Mm-hmm.
They were brand new, but they were constructed in 1981.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
okay.
They were living in a basement. They mm-hmm. weren't even on a car. They were living in the basement. I actually put them on the car for the first time in their lives.
Right.
So they were stored downstairs in a basement for all those years. So that's what kind of allowed me to do that. Was it a smart idea? Big fat question mark. But but I see where Ray is going. And yeah. In due time, they will disappear, I'm sure. But right now, they're
hopefully not on their own.
Right.
Yeah.
Hopefully not disintegrate piece by piece.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what. And yeah, I have actually had a tire, like you say, Ray, on the Seville. It split, and you got to see like the inside of
the carcass.
Tire itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the tread was about an inch and a half away from the sidewall.
It's like the turkey on Christmas vacation where it just goes and opens and the smoke comes out. Well, if people want to yell at you, Chris, how can they get in touch with us to do that.
They can call us at 516-572-7440. They can go to our website and click the button if they want to send us an email, if they don't want to hear any banter going back and forth.
Right.
And we're available on Instagram, real_MotorMouthRadio, of course, with all Facebook and Twitter and Bumble and Jumble and Gumbo and whatever else.
You know what? And we do have a call, so... Oh, let's do this and this and that and say, hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths and Steve Linden. Caller?
Hello!
We had a call. Now it went to that red thing with the slash. Oh, well, anyway, call back again. Okay. Try again, 516-572-7440. So, Steve, you still have your beauty, a couple of beauties in your fleet, one of which is all over your social media, which is a car you've owned for many, many years, your Cougar.
Yes.
Which is great because... I think we've owned our cars about the same amount of time, and mine has gone through a restoration. Yours hasn't needed one, luckily. So, I try to impart on people how the feeling that you get, that one gets when they drive a car that they've owned for so long, or even if they buy the car that they had in high school. Can you add some, maybe your thoughts to that? Because I have a few guys that are need to put some cars together, and I want them to do it so they can have that feeling. So it's just a project I'm working on.
You know, it's hard to describe the feeling, I have to say. I drove that car here today. It's actually out in the parking lot.
Great.
Wow. And it's a great feeling. You know, I've had it for 50 years now.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, my wife and I got married in it. My son drove it to his graduation.
Mm-hmm.
I think in one word, I could sum up the feeling that I get driving it would be comfort. It's everything is second nature to me. I don't have to think about anything.
Right.
It still has the original AM/FM radio in it.
Yeah.
Cool. With the push buttons.
Still go.
Yeah. And I listen to music. I don't have to worry about Bluetooth or Pandora. Right. It's just simple. You know, it's just very, very simple.
I tell people, I get a little more in depth. I tell people when I get on the highway, 30 years flies off my shoulders.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I missed that call because we don't have a call light, so I have to see the phone, and I just caught that one at the end, so missed it. Caller, try again. I'm sorry. I'll watch a little closer this time.
Steve, it's funny because you are as an investor, I have to ask you this question because I'm sure you've tried to disseminate this, but you can park a 72 Mustang convertible next to your Cougar. Which one is worth more? And I think we all know the answer to this, even if they're both in the same shape. And it must be frustrating to you. Am I right?
What was the other car? What was the first car you mentioned?
Mustang.
A Mustang.
What year Mustang?
Well,
72. Same as mine.
Oh, same year. Okay, yeah. That's what I missed.
Yeah, there's up. Oh, I think
there's
all
right,
got
hang
a call.
On. We're going to try this again.
Okay.
Let's go to the phones and say, hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths. Maybe there's more at work here than just the phone light, because
I think so.
I am not hearing anybody on this line.
Neither am I.
No. All right. That's okay. Something to report back to the head office. First, it was a light. I guess we can't get calls at all. I'm sorry, Steve. So now back to the question on the table.
Just on an investment purpose, what are your feelings?
Mustang, without a doubt, is far more. I mean, my 72 Cougar convertible, put it next to a 72 Mustang convertible equipped the same way.
Right.
And everybody's going to choose the Mustang.
Well, but that's not really the question. Which is more, because I was just talking to a friend of mine who's a Ford guy, and I said there were a couple of Shelby, the 500s that came through, which are always kind of the, you know, it's not the GT350, it's the GT500. People didn't want those cars. And now they're kind of coming up.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like the 71, 72 variety.
Mm-hmm.
That body style, when that body style came in, a lot of people just were turned off. I don't know. I don't know why. But
my point being with putting those two cars together is when you do look at the Cougar, to me, the Cougar is a more substantial looking car. And I'm a big car guy. So when I look at that Cougar, I'm like, it's like you say, Steve, it's got a luxury to it that the Mustang does not have. And
right.
It was designed by its creators that way. There was an intentional goal here to make a Mustang more luxurious, but you know, on that same platform. And the Cougar delivers. And the fact that it's less expensive than an equally equipped Mustang to me is almost enticing. Like, I go for the Cougar because of that, because I can get it at 2/3 the price of the Mustang. Well, and it's like, it's almost like a best kept secret, if you ask me. Yeah.
You make a great point. I tell people all the time, it's the same thing with GM. It's not just the same thing with Ford and Mercury. You know, let's not forget, you know, Chevy and Pontiac were the bottom of the line of GM cars. There was Pontiac, Buick, Oldsmobile, and Cadillac. Yet, what's worth more, a 442 or a GTO or a Chevelle SS? You know, the Chevelle and the GTO, they were the bottom of the line cars, but they're worth more. So I tell people all the time, you know, if you don't have to have that name, you know, go with an Oldsmobile, go with a Buick, go with something like that.
You know, you could extrapolate further, and even with the Chryslers, they strip those cars down to keep them competitive. So we're talking rubber floor mats, bench seats, column shifts in a car that became one of the most iconic cars of the era.
The Roadrunner.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And it traveled over to the GTI. But you could have bought a Satellite, or you could have bought, you know, one of the lesser models and equipped it the same way.
Right.
But, you know, that was for then. This is for now. And, you know, people want that, you know, they want that... I guess they want the wow factor. They want that name recognition. I don't know.
They do, and you know. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was also going to say, you know, strictly from an investment perspective, it's sometimes I tell people you have to look at the cost of owning the car, not the cost of buying a car. Because, you know, if you buy my Cougar for, pick a number, it doesn't matter, for $20,000, drive it for a couple of years and sell it for $10,000, it costs you $10,000 to own it, you know, exclusive of repairs and things. If you buy a Mustang for $20,000 and sell it 5 years from now for $20,000, it didn't cost you anything to own the car.
Sure.
So it's not necessarily, sometimes you're better off paying more for a car if it's going to be, you know, easier to sell down the road.
I guess if that's your intent, you know.
If that's your intent, to sell.
You know, and then again, like we've all seen guys buy the craziest things for the craziest reasons, and, you know, sometimes there's fads or there's, you know.
Yep.
Well, I was always a fan. Every time I go to a car show and I see a line of 69 Chevelle SSs, if I would love to see that Buick GS sitting there, or the old 442, because it'd be like, okay, I got a whole bunch of those Chevelles.
Go to the Buick show. You'll see a line of 69 GSs.
Agreed. You know, it's like going to the Pontiac show, and you get to see a whole boatload of GTOs.
Right, correct.
So, yeah, if you give me a Tempest with a overhead cam 6 in it, I'm like, hey, something different.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, so I like the variety, and sometimes the variety you can get at a very good price.
Absolutely.
You know, cars that have gotten popular now that never, ever, ever were really, which I was always a fan of, are station wagons. Have you seen that in your work?
Yes.
Has it made it to that? Because that's something that I see all the time now. And then the guys are actually taking them, and you get some pretty well-optioned wagons out there.
Yeah.
And guys are just leaving the body patinaed, but just, you know, dry like an old Kingswood Estate or a you know, some of the Chrysler wagons and even some of the, you know, the Ford stuff.
Town and Country.
I think that's great. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, wagons are getting popular. Some of the probably over the past 5 years, they've really, really gotten popular. There have been a few iconic wagons, as we know, that have always been popular.
Right.
You know, the Oldsmobiles with the...
Yeah, the Vista Cruiser.
The Vista Cruisers, right, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. But those notwithstanding, the Nomads and all that, those are the ones that were always, you know, the unobtainiums. Yeah, like I said, just the Chevy, you know, a Kingswood Estate or, you know, the... I don't remember all the... There was another one. There was a couple. The Briarwood was another one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Nine Passenger. Yeah, Brookwood was another one, right.
Yeah.
And... You know, and then you had the Ford had kind of a mid-sized one based on a Falcon.
Right.
Of course, you had the Novas, the Nova wagon. I know two people that have recently bought Nova wagons that are, you know, one of them's a resto mod, so it's nice. It has a modern paint job on it and modern engine and AC. And the other one is all original, straight six, you know, with three in a tree. So they're out there. And the straight six one was in a garage parked for about 40 years, you know, locally. And just word of mouth, guy found it and bought it, and, you know, going to put it back on the road.
So why are people buying these station wagons now? That's the question.
Yeah, I don't know. See, I've always liked them.
That's an easy one to answer. That's easy.
Well, let's see if we agree.
What do you think, Chris? What's your
reason? I think because since we are all of the same age, I think we've all grown up with those wagons. Like, we're pre-minivan kids. So I think it's a nostalgia thing, definitely, that guys that have the money, that want to relive, like you say, Ray, take 30 years off their lives, pretty much, and they go by. I mean, unfortunately, now they're the ones driving it, because I think to truly relive the nostalgia, you got to go sit in the back in the jump seat.
You know, I don't know.
Someone else drive.
This is the problem with conversation, too. Now you can nitpick it to death. I look at it as like, yeah, wagons to me when I was a kid was what the neighbor had because there were no minivans, and it was just that utilitarian jump in the back and go. We're not surfers or anything, you know, so we didn't have to worry about, you know, board storage or whatever. They were not cool cars. They were just... You know, mom had a station wagon, or the neighbor did. It was just, you know, like, yeah. You know what? I grew up, there was an Etzel on my block and an Amphi car, too. I mean, there was didn't ever want either one of those either. I still don't. Maybe the Amphi car.
Yeah, that might be cool.
Yeah, I don't know. But, so I don't know. Nostalgia, I think, is the reason. And then I think what people found is now with the internet and with TV, you see what other people have done. And wagons can be cool. Set of wheels. Just throw a nice set of wheels on a wagon of almost any condition, and it's going to look, you know, 80% better.
But there's one thing I think that you're both leaving out of the whole equation.
What's that?
What can a wagon, pick any car, what can a 1972 Chevy wagon do that a Chevy Le Mans can't do?
Oh, utility. You can put stuff in the back.
Not just stuff. You can put people in.
Well, people, yeah.
People. You can go with people. You can go with your family. You can go with friends. And that's what I see people doing with these cars.
Well, a regular wagon, like, say, a Malibu wagon, it's a six-passenger. Right. Has a bench. But so is the car. The Malibu's a six-passenger also.
Yeah.
It does give you the space in the back.
Right. It gives you the extra space. Yeah.
For stuff.
Yep.
You know, unless you get the... Then, of course, you go up to the nine-passenger wagon and, you know, you got seats in the back. Yeah, it's... Yeah, it's interesting. You know, it's same thing with El Caminos and the Ford Rancheros. From the from the seat forward, it's the car that it was based off of, and then just behind it, there's a pickup bed.
See, now that actually completely refutes my theory, because an El Camino or a Ranchero, they're useless from the window back, right?
Yeah,
but why are they so popular?
Unless there's two of you, or maybe three. Right, exactly.
They're right, because they're just good for two people and stuff.
Then again, there's a lot of guys from through the years, they put the camper back on that, now it becomes Now it's a house on wheels.
Yeah.
So now it just jumped ahead.
True.
Because now it can do things the wagon. Now you don't have to use a sleeping bag in the back and worry about the bears looking through the windows. You got a camper on it. Yeah, you know what? That's why I love these conversations. I love having them with you, Steve, because it took three of us to get that out.
There's no right answer.
Exactly.
No, there isn't. I always say that there are times where that bar drops completely, and station wagons fit that bill, because at the time in 1972 those station wagons were everywhere, and like Ray says, they were just people movers. Right. There was nothing sexy about them. There was nothing creative about them. They were used, put away wet, and junked when
That's
the rock
right.
went up to
sure.
the door handles.
Yeah.
So now if you look at all these SUVs that all look like jelly beans, they all look pretty much the same, the cars that are plodding the roads now, and you see all of this complete lack of ingenuity, those station wagons are looking pretty good right now.
I think you're right, yeah.
Compared to the junk on the roads that people are driving around.
And especially, like a lot of them, were ordered with big blocks for towing packages.
Sure.
And the rear end, even has a highway rear. You can change that, you know, and you can change the transmission. You can modify it. They would disc brake cars and all. So, yeah, there was a lot of stuff. And a lot of them were ordered with a little more luxury because, you know, the owner wanted to be just a little more comfortable in his car. You know?
Right.
So, yeah, they're cool.
Because Cadillac didn't build one.
That's right.
Yes, see, now, that's a great point.
I just watched a video, one of Tom Cotter's videos. He does Barn Find Hunter, where he drives his Woody wagon that is a resto mod. It's got an LS in it and an overdrive tranny and AC. You can't tell by looking at it, and he drives it all over the country. And he hooked up with a friend of his in Virginia to go look at a collection, and that guy was driving either a 60 or a 61 Ford wagon. I forget the model. It had wood sides on it, the wood grain sides on it.
Country Squire.
He called it something else. Yeah.
Really?
It was another
Country
model.
Squire?
No, it was like, I think, the model below that. Because I remember the name stuck in my head is like, okay. And it was like the yellow color Ford.
Right.
Like, okay.
Of course.
He was into the wagon thing too. He figured it out. So it was kind of cool seeing the two. They did some aerial shots with the two of them driving down a road. It was very interesting.
That is interesting. So, yeah.
Yeah. So what else is interesting, Chris, is it is the bottom of the hour, and it is time. Do we have, or do you have, an honor group of the hour for us today?
Of course we do. Isn't this Motormouth Radio, the world's most fastest talk show? Of course we have. Today, the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour. If you stop to enjoy all the different smells coming from your classic car all mixed together after a night of cruising around. Have you ever pulled the car into the garage, shut it off, and just took a second to appreciate all the scents emitting from that old car? The car has its own scents. You know this. Mm-hmm. There's that warm grease and oil smell mixed with the carnauba wax smell mixed with the Christmas tree air freshener smell. And if you're Ray, I'm sure there would be some burnt tire smell back there as well. So if you step back into the garage to get a quick whiff and appreciate all those mixed automotive smells coming from your well-run classic car, you're part of the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour.
Yeah, I do see that. Like, I walk in the garage and, like, yeah, you just smell.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one. I like that.
Yep.
And I'll tell you what, what you need to do is, if you like my chiropractor who tuned in this morning, you need to listen Sundays at 8 a.m. It's a new time. That's Sunday today, to Jewish Talk. Rabbi Pearl, he thinks in Jewish, but he speaks in English. He is a great orator, this man. I'm not Jewish, but I like to listen to him because he really speaks wisdom. And he features the best in Jewish talk and issues affecting the Jewish community. It's a new one-hour show. So tune in and get that this morning. Well, for next week, remember, 8 o'clock. Rabbi Pearl, you'll like it. And
Mazel tov.
My chiropractor, I went into the office this morning. He says, hey, I was just listening to Rabbi Pearl. I'm like, okay, good. Anything good? Words of wisdom?
So then you started dancing, and everybody was dancing.
Right.
No?
There wasn't that many people in the office. All right, we're going to take our bonding hour break. Chris, we're going to keep on with our theme of
Gladys Knight and the Pips?
No. We're going to delve from Gladys Knight. And, of course,
what?
I want to tell you, that was Tony Camillo who played the Hammond B3 organ on that track. That song wasn't written by them either. It was written by somebody else. So, like most good songs.
Holland Dozier Holland, perhaps?
No, you would think, right? That was the powerhouse. Written and performed by Jim Weatherby under the title Midnight Plane to Houston.
Really?
Oh. And then when it went through through the offices, and they decided, you know, they threw it to Gladys Knight to have her sing it, and then they said, now the name's got to change. And he told them, he says, you know what, you can change the name, he says, but you can't change, there was something else, like some part of the lyrics or whatever, so they just tweaked it, and everybody became wildly happy because they're still using it today. But no, I have a better one, Chris, one that you probably played on the old AM air bands back in the day. That's
right. Here on Ray Guarino's School of Rock and Roll.
Yeah, this was one. Well, I've had some conversations this week about music on the show. People are really liking it, and they're asking me for some stuff. So I said, okay. But here's
they want you to play music throughout the whole show and not talk about cars.
Probably what it was. But here's one that our late great friend Dennis the Goatman always loved. It was one of his favorites. So I'm playing that in his honor today, and we'll be back in a minute. Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer, Mr. Steve Linden, and keep it where you got it on 90.3 WHPC. Duck for cover.
In the heat of a summer night, in the land of the dollar bill.
My name is Carl Anthony with Automoblog and AutoVision News, and you're listening to Ray and Chris on Motormouth Radio, WHPC 90.3 FM.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Limbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop will fix your car. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. All repairs include the CarStar Lifetime Nationwide Warranty, ensuring that the experts at Celebrity Chase Collision are always on your side.
Y si hablamos español.
More information is available at 516-593-0920 or online at celebritychasecollision.com.
You're You're listening to the Motor Mouth.
Hello, gentlemen.
Next
you guys one. Call yourself hot rods. Come on, man.
I was waiting for you to learn how to trim my bonsai plant.
Motor Mouth.
Love the show and keep them coming.
You have to excuse me. I was just outside messing around with the car.
I'm reluctant to say I'm anything like you guys.
Motor Mouth.
But I am exactly like you guys.
I try and keep every old thing going. Good show as usual.
Motor Mouth.
You guys are trouble.
I know you guys have your finger on the pulse of stuff.
Our trained staff of two will help.
Come on and ask and answer some car questions. I'm a fountain of useless knowledge.
Quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time.
Instructions are just another man's opinion, Ray.
Yeah, I talk to you guys when I need you. I appreciate you. I listen to you.
Yeah, I want to know what the is wrong with my car.
I'll be glad to answer any questions for you. I can.
You're different because you glow in the dark, so it's
yes.
All good.
Rob, can I ask you a question?
Sure, ask anything.
Motor Mouth!
Have you heard from Ray or Chris saying that this was going to be the best show ever in the history of
No, you see, it's
mankind.
Funny because Ray will come in and say, well, Rob, this is going to be the greatest
it's
show
we've
Sunday ever
done. It's not Sunday morning until I'm sure.
And sometimes
that
Chris...
Motor Mouth Radio is going to be the best show that was ever done.
And then Chris will sometimes joke that it's going to be the worst show they've ever done.
There are answers, sometimes correct ones, and we may have them.
Motor Mouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHPC.
Motor Mouth!
Hey, you, get over here. Every Sunday, 12 to 1, you are going to tune in to hear the Motor Mouths, my friends Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer. 90.3 FM, WHPC. You might learn something.
Face it, and a buster cheers away, the night Chicago died.
Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. There you go.
Don't write lyrics like that anymore.
Steve and I were talking during the ramp up here, and he's like, "Hey, wait a minute, do I know that show?" I said, "Hey, it's an English song. You got to know it." And of course, who doesn't know "The Night Chicago Died" by Paper Lace? Right?
Paper Lace, yes, 1973,
three or four. Yeah. The thing is, and I read a little bit about this song too when they proposed it. When Paper Lace, they're in England, they're in the UK. And they sent it over. They sent the demos. And I forget what house had gotten it. One of the bigger New York houses. And absolutely hated it. Hated it. Said, no way will we ever put that thing on vinyl. I guess because of the whole subject matter of, you know, cops being killed and right. And they said it was kind of fashioned after, like, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Although, with some liberties, because there's a lot. There is no east side of Chicago, first of all.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't either. There's a north, a south, and a west. They never refer to the east because that's where the river is. And it's just like... So there was some inconsistencies, but you know what? It's still a great piece of rock history that lives on.
I never knew that either.
You know, that's what Wikipedia is for in our lives. We used to have the Encyclopedia Britannica. It's got nothing on Wikipedia.
Well, thanks to Jim Croce, I know there's a south side of Chicago.
Right.
This is why I love this show, because we learn more stuff that has nothing to do with cars.
Very true. Yeah.
It's like, I didn't know there's no east side of Chicago.
But if you think of it, you know, car guys, and you know, one of my friends told me years ago, cars and guitars, you know, cars and music just go together. And of course, they do. You know, there's when you drive, you listen to the radio, there's car songs, there's, you know, all sorts of, you're in the garage working, you have the radio on, there's always...
I have so many friends that are car collectors and guitar collectors. You're absolutely right. They cross over.
Yeah.
Very true. Steve, and as far as investments are concerned, what have you seen rise in value that has surprised you lately? Because I'm sure a lot of stuff's been going up, way up, but there's probably some better than others.
You know, that's a really, really good question. I'm not sure that there's anything... any year, make, or model that surprised me that's gone up in value. I think what surprised me more than anything is how much some of them have gone up in value.
Okay.
You know, like I was looking at Bring a Trailer the other day. That's, you know, of course, I don't have to tell you about that.
Right.
And I've been kind of sort of following, you know, Buick GNXs.
Oh.
You know, nice low mileage GNXs are $250,000 now.
Sure.
You know,
things
like that.
Yeah, I saw one on the auction went for what? The one that has got like 55 miles on it?
Yeah. Yep.
Went for $202,000.
And then another one went for $211,000, and then another one went for even more.
And, and there was a long time people didn't even know what those cars
exactly
were.
Exactly, right. Yeah. So it's the amounts that are amazing.
You know what I found? The biggest surprise for me personally was in the last year or so, I remember seeing the big caddy convertibles from 65 to 70,
yeah.
you can get the best one possible for like 10 grand. And I'm going back like 18 months ago.
Right.
And then, and of course, the Eldorados from 71 to 76, those convertibles were not even hitting 10 grand for a decent one. I mean, there were some that some people were asking huge amount of dollars for those mint examples, but I'm talking about just drivers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Hagerty came out with their 10 best cars that they want, they're seeing.
Yep.
I swear, everybody and their mother must have seen that list. Because one of them on the list were those big Cadillacs, the big rear drivers from 65 to 70. Now you can't touch one for like less than 20 grand.
It's more than that. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I'm like, and it all happened like right after that article because I've been looking because I want to cash in the 300 and buy something else. And I've been looking and all of a sudden, bang, those things went like skyrocketed.
Right.
I'm like, what in the world? What happened?
Well, they've been undervalued for a long time, if you really think about it. You know, if you think about what you're getting for the money, you know, it's...
You know, I've had some talks with people about that, and a good friend of mine, I just put him together with another party, and he bought a 62 Lincoln suicide door. The car had been totally gone through. Engine, transmission rebuilt. It had been repainted 15 years ago. The stainless is all very well presented. The top works flawlessly. The windows work. And I said, yeah, this is the one. And he bought it. In fact, used it as a centerpiece for his 4th of July party last week.
Nice.
Put some red, white, and blue bunting across it and all. It looks well. And we were discussing price and all. I said, yeah, you know what? The guy's asking, it's a decent price for this car. I said, but you're getting a lot for the money. You don't have to do any of the stuff that's been done that's been very costly, like an engine rebuild on that car. Or if you had to find stainless or other pieces to the car, you'd be searching, you know, night and day. And the top is...
The top mechanism is known on those cars.
That's the elephant in the room. I said, you know, I went and took a video of it working to show them. Yeah, it works. You know, this thing, it's amazing to watch it in person.
The one man who used to travel back and forth across the country, the people used to wait years for an appointment.
Wow.
He used to drive back and forth in a motorhome with all the parts he needed to... his name was John Cashman.
Okay.
He was known in the industry. He retired. So now if you own one of those cars and top brakes, you have a little bit of a problem.
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy. Yeah. So again, just like the caddies, I tell people, you want to get a nice 69, 72 caddy. Yeah, they're great cars. I love them too.
Yeah.
But make sure, and I think you have a better chance with a car like that, that it hasn't been screwed with and picked apart, like a lot of the muscle car stuff, because they were owned by adults and they were usually just, when they were done, they were just parked. But yeah, I make sure it's all there, as much of it as possible, because trim and little parts are going to be very hard to find.
Absolutely. And the big parts, because they have so much chrome, they're very, very expensive to restore. So buy one that you either like or that's restored.
Now, if you go back to like the 50s with the cat, those bumpers.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I was talking with a fella. He had his car at the shop. It was a Imperial. What year was it? It was an early 60s Imperial. Huge bumpers. I mean, I was there when he took the bumpers off. They were like... The bumpers were in like 7 pieces that were all bolted together. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And we went to Nassau Chrome or Mineola Chrome, whatever the name is over here. And the prices, it was like the prices he was giving them to do bumpers was like he was buying a new car.
Right.
You know, thousands of dollars.
And how long would he have to wait for them?
Yeah, that was the thing. We didn't even get to that.
Yeah.
You know, actually, he turned away the rear bumper because it was one piece. And he said his, and I saw his guy who polishes the bumpers. He happens to be a black man who's like 6'5". This guy is built. He's like in really great shape. And he holds that bumper like this. And on the wheel, he's...
Really?
Yeah. And,
wow.
I mean, and, but, you know, this guy is in his 60s. He's getting older. And he says, yeah, you know, his back can only take so much. He says, and when he's gone, I forget it. He goes, so I have to turn that one down. I can't really put him through that right
now. That's interesting. Wow.
And at the time, I was looking to have bumpers, do bumpers for my Pontiac. And I realized, like, you know what? I'm going to go to AMD. And I bought Repro bumpers. Which I'll say right now, I've said it before, the finish is beautiful. They're nice chrome. As soon as I took it out of the box, I felt it and said, it's lighter. Yeah, it's lighter. It's not the same weight as the original bumper. But for the cost difference, I could have bought 2 sets or maybe 3 sets.
Unless you're restoring a concourse quality car, that's the way to go. Yep. Even I see so many Corvettes, you know, with Repro bumpers on them, you know, 60s and 70s. They look great from 10 feet away, 5 feet away, get up close, you'll see the little sanding scratches under the chrome, you know. Yeah. But they're perfectly fine unless you're going to an NCRS show.
Sure, sure.
You know? And they're a quarter of the price of re-chroming the bumpers.
I kept the originals, so you know, if I ever decide to spend that lottery money, you know, I can do that later. But
yeah.
So, Chris, like your car, your Chrysler, what you're going through to find parts for that,
it's incredibly
the swamps
difficult.
Of Alabama.
Yeah, it's the truth, Steve. I actually went and got door panels that were from a convertible that was outside in the weather for 20 years. And if you know the quality of late 60s, early 70s Chrysler vinyl, it's awful.
Yeah.
And these things were, they looked like shriveled raisins when I got them. And I had the heat gun and I'm flex straightening the vinyl. Thankfully, you were able to heat it and it wouldn't tear. It was like burlap almost. Mm. And I was able to straighten it all out and make some sort of semblance of a door panel. But yeah, I've gotten to that point where I still just can't get over these cars are 50 years old. I'm still wrapping a thought around that.
Have you counted the candles on your last birthday cake? I went on to like the muffins after it. We go cupcakes after the cake. addendum.
It's like, how are these cars getting older without us getting older?
Exactly.
I'm still 22.
Yeah. Right.
So what have you been to any good appraisals lately? Have you have anything knock your socks off that you stepped up? Because I know you're probably, I don't know, are you jaded when someone calls you up and not say jaded, but you're like, all right, I'll go and see what this is. Was there anything that you went, wow, this is awesome?
You know, honestly and truly, over the last couple of years, on an individual car basis, not really. You know, there's not a week that goes by that I don't see a collection that somebody opens up a door or a garage or something and you see a collection that's here on Long Island, you know, and you've never heard of it and you didn't know that it was there. And you just
Hispano Suezo.
Oh, and you see, you know, 50 or 100 cars, you know, and that somebody's built an elevator to get below their house. And that I see all the time, you know, and the cars are spectacular, but they're nothing special.
Yeah.
You know, so the collections always amaze me. The cars themselves, no, I really haven't seen anything, you know, that blew me away in the last couple of years.
That's what happens when you see enough cars after a while. Like, you know, we go to a car show, it's like, okay, Camaro, Chevelle, Pontiac. But, you know, it's like, and I'll stop at like a Pinto or a Vega.
Yeah.
Like, hey, wow, I haven't seen one of these in a while.
Yeah.
That's what happens. It's sensory overload with this
stuff. It's true. I mean, I go to those car shows like you do, and, you know, I'll stop. I'll look at Gremlins, you know, just because they're cool cars, and you don't see them at every show.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, or station wagons.
Or station wagons, yeah.
See, look at you guys. You're dropping the bar.
Right.
You're dropping the nets.
We're trying to subliminally, get the market a little bit down so we can swoop in and...
While the show's going on, do you want me to just sit here quietly in the background and go station wagon?
There you go. Just look. Gremlin. Right.
Gremlin, yes. Volkswagen Beetle.
Right.
No, it's true. And it's funny because that's why I have what I own. Because it's so unique, but like Ray says, it's a double-edged sword because it is so unique. It's a pain to find those parts for it, especially the soft stuff, especially the engine components, the engineering components, the suspension, whatever. Those things are fairly easy to find. As long as the credit card is still good, you'll be able to get it. But when it comes to like light switch knobs and door cranks and things like that, holy moly, it's been hard. It's been difficult to do. And that's what, I don't know, is it, it's like you say, Steve, there's the joy of getting into that resto mod, starting it up and going. Mm-hmm. Or do you want to be that guy that does it yourself and the car is sitting on blocks for 7 years? Because
whatever makes you happy. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, it's also the internal drive. And I have to say, I did that with my car. And I said, I'm not going to be that guy. And the quick synopsis was there were many days. This is going
which guy is that? The guy that has the car on blocks
for 7 or more years, right? Plenty of day. And I share the story with people who are involved with restorations. I said, you know, you're obviously doing it yourself. You know what to do. And we all farm certain things out. Very few of us can do everything.
Right.
So, and I'm one of them. I don't do everything. Bodywork and paint is the big everything I don't do.
Yep.
So there were days I'd be out in the garage working on a car, and you know, I would go ahead, go advance three steps, but go back four or back five because maybe a part didn't fit or something I made now didn't or interfered with something else in the next stage. And I would come in and sit down, you know, and you close up the shop, and my wife would say, "Wow, you know, you what's the matter? You had a bad day?" I'm like, "Yeah, you know, I had a bad day. I kind of went backwards a little." And she was, "Well, you know, the first time," she says, "Well, is that gonna, how's that going to affect you?" I said, "Going to clean up, have dinner." I said, "You know, watch TV. Tomorrow I'm going right back out, and I'm just going to fix what was wrong." I said, "Because I'm not." You know, that's what happens. Now, and I've had guys tell me this. "Yeah, you know what? The car ticked me off." He goes, "I'm not going to, I can't deal with it for now." And then, like, the box gets put on top, and the pool toys, and the cushions, and next thing you know, now it's an hour's of work to get to the car just to work on it again. So I said, "That's never going to happen. You know, I'm going to go right back at it and just doggedly do it." And did. And it worked. You know, but you have to have that determination.
You know, it's not just determination whether you're doing it yourself or whether you're dealing with a shop.
Mm.
You have to have realistic expectations. Now, you and I have been working on our cars long enough that you and I both know that something during the course of the job, the restoration, the whatever you're doing, something is going to go wrong.
Yes.
There's going to be a wrong part. There's going to, whatever it happens to be.
Right.
You just have to build that into your plan and say, "I'm not going to let it get me upset, you know, and I'm going to deal with it however I have to deal with it."
Right.
And if you have realistic expectations, it's much more enjoyable.
Then again, I'm reading your column in Newsday this week where a guy had a Restomod built, took it out, and the car caught on fire.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just like lit up and like, "Hey."
Yep.
And the first thing I said was, "Who checked that car?" Like, and I read further and said, "Okay, we're on the same track here. Like, where was the quality control? Where was the next step of intervention with that?" And, you know, wow. And now, of course, you were talking about like litigation. Where is the culpability?
Where's the liability, yeah.
You know, which is very, very important.
But, you know, again, if you have realistic expectations, I tell people all the time, and I've written it in the column many times, if you're having a car restored, do not pick the car up and put this in writing with whoever's doing the restoration. Give them permission and require that they're going to drive this car 50, 100, 200 miles before you get the car. Because anything that's going to break, that's when it's going to happen.
Sure.
And if the shop was doing it, it would have caught on fire when they were driving it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, so always have a shop shake down a car after significant work's been done.
Yeah. I know my friend's motorcycle shop here in Hempstead, Gerard at Rolling Thunder, he does that. He personally rides every, even though his mechanics are very competent and he trusts them, he rides every bike just as, because the mechanic had an RO and they knew what they had to do on that vehicle.
Right.
And they did it. You know, but now he'll ride it and say, "Hey, well, this directional is out," or something just doesn't feel right with it. Stuff that wasn't asked to be fixed, and now he can come back as the shop owner and maybe call the customer and say, "Hey, I rode the bike, everything else is done, but I found this or this. Would you like us to address it?"
Right.
You know, and now, and he says the reason is because when the customer gets the bike back, and this is with cars too, that's probably what they're going to hone in on. Like, "Hey, the cigarette lighter, it's the Sinju syndrome," right?
Exactly.
Sinju, right. Since you had the car, since you had the bike.
Since you rebuilt the motor, my lighter doesn't work. And then he'll say, "Hey, listen, I noticed that it's out." "Oh, yeah, it's been out for years. Would you like us to address it, or is it okay?" You know, and just get that write-off on it.
That's smart business and good customer relations. I don't know why everyone doesn't do that.
Actually, very, very well. You know, I'll tell you, I had a thought. Last year, I'd worked on a car at the shop, and I did a major brake changeover, brake job. Everything was done, all hydraulics and mechanical components. And, of course, I had to test drive it, break all the brakes in. And it was at that moment, I had this moment of like, wow, the onus on me is very, very strong right now. Someone's life is, I'm going to hand this car off.
Right.
And I don't know how they're going to drive it. But when they hit this brake, they expect it to work, and they expect not to go through the intersection. And I almost had a little bit of a panic moment where I didn't want to let the car go. It was like, wow, this is like too much for me to bear. And I said, wait, I've been doing this for years. Like, what am I worried about now? You know. But
who better to do the job?
Well, but
I've
discussed it with other people, other mechanics, and they said the same thing. Like, yeah, I think a lot of guys have had that moment at one point or another of like, yeah, the safety of the next person is now in my hands. And just kind of weighs on you. And you wonder, well, you know, when I had to drop my car off or something, did the guy, oh, did they think that way? Or,
you know, that's a great point. And you could even take it a step further. As you're saying it, I'm thinking about it. Even though you know your work is done, and even though you know that everything's right, and you test drive and everything's perfect, I would say there's even a next level you could take it to when you've done significant brake work like that. And what about taking the car owner for a test drive with them driving with you in the car? Because if it's got new lines and it's got new pads and it's got new rotors or calipers, whatever it happens to be, right, it may not feel the same to them when they drive it.
Well,
true.
You know, and they come to an intersection and they expect it to stop the old way and it stops the,
and they go through the windshield. Yeah. I've done that the other way where I've had people, you drive the car, you drive, because usually it's when there's a noise complaint.
Right.
It's like, you know what? I drove it. I couldn't find it. Tell you what, come down. I want you to drive the car and I want to be the passenger, because you probably drive it differently than I do.
Yeah.
And maybe you can replicate it. And I can't. So we've done that on the front end. Usually not on the, there are times where I've done that on the back end. If I noticed, because sometimes you don't test drive the car first. It comes in a tow truck or a flatbed.
Right.
And it's like, okay, fix it. Now you fix it. What was it like before? I don't know. But that's a very good point.
Interesting what you said. It's, you know, only because it was brakes, you know, because it may feel different to someone. You know, anything else, it's not, you know, their life's not on the line.
That's true. Well, brake steering, you know.
Brake steering, right,
Those 35-year-old tires.
Older.
Yeah, older. So, wow.
35 are new.
Steve, we're going to be winding down, so we have a few more minutes left. How can people contact you if they want to use your services or just check in on you with your with the things that you do media-wise?
They can contact me through the website, which is my name, stevelinden.com, or they can call me. The contact information's on the website. I'm pretty easy to reach. The one thing that they can't do, although people do it all the time, is text me.
Yeah.
You know, I try to be polite and tell people all the time, we get over 1,000 unsolicited texts a day.
Wow.
And that's not an exaggeration. So we just... I could hire two people to just sit there and respond to texts all day long that are just useless. So, yeah.
And if you follow our social media, Motormouth Radio on the web, on Twitter, and on Facebook, Real_Motormouth Radio on Twitter, on Instagram, I had put up a post and I put your website link on there can see it from there and just click on it and go right to your website.
Thank you very much.
So
Motormouth is on my website, by the way.
It is, and actually it needs to be changed or amended because you have, I did see it, and the listing says we're on Thursdays and Sundays, which is the old, we haven't done that for like 9 years.
I will get my web guy on that right away.
All right, just a little detail.
Yes, I will do that.
I knew someone on our end would probably catch it sooner or later, but yeah, it's inconsequential.
Yeah, no, we'll take care of it right away.
Yeah. And, so what's coming up next? South Shore car shows? I mean, there's going to be, they're all over the place, man. There's so many new, I think everybody just wants to get out and do stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
True.
There's a couple of lists out there, as I'm sure you're aware, that the car clubs put out, and there's just, pick a night of the week, pick a location, and there's a show going on.
I like the cruise nights. That's my kind of thing.
Yeah, me too.
I like to do the local cruises, because now you don't have to stay for 6 hours.
Right.
There's no trophies. You can come and go as you please. And
people aren't tearing your car apart.
that too, right. Right.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I don't want to get judged. Never.
Right, exactly.
Don't judge me.
I always said, look, I am a car show judge. You know, and maybe it's a little... I don't know. Maybe it's, I don't know what the right word is to use, but I say, hey, what makes you better than me to judge my car? You know? So
right.
I say, that's okay. You know, don't have to worry about that.
No, good point.
I've always said if a close friend has a compliment or even they pick something apart on my car that they don't like or find something wrong, that to me is a better trophy because it comes from somewhere I know and trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doesn't have to be positive. It could be even, well.
I do it all the time.
If
whenever I'm working on a car, Ray, you're over my shoulder, whether you're there or not. Because, I'll be working on it, I'll wrap it up in duct tape or whatever it is, and I'll go, it's fine. And then I think, no, because if I pop the hood and Ray sees that, I said, I'm never going to live it down. Yeah. So I always have to up my game, even though you're there or not. I always have to up my game whenever I'm putting something together.
That's like the shirt that I'm going to have made that I wear at the shop where I say, WWMD, what would Mike do? That's the guy at the shop. And I say, I'm in a jam to fit. What would Mike do? Because ultimately, he's got the sign off on it. So
I love that.
And I try to think that way.
Yeah, I do the same. What would Ray do?
We'll go to WWRD for you. We'll do that.
Wow. Right. What would Ray do? Exactly.
Right.
It's like real fast. Steve, I had my car, I ran the Chrysler last week, and the carburetor is
urinating gasoline everywhere. And I just, the first thing I do is take a picture of it and send it to Ray. I'm like, damn, Holly carburetor.
Yep.
Son of
they do that. Yep.
All right. So that's it. For now, we got to get out of here. Kim is coming in with Thunder Road, Best of Bruce, and the bunch. So stay in and don't call because the phone isn't working. Steve, thank you very much for coming
My pleasure. Thank you.
Chris, what do we say when we leave?
Don't follow us home, but if you do, get your car appraised from Steve.
Right. Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer, Motor Mouth Radio will be back next week. See ya.
See ya,
bye.